Liverpool keep winning late. For some reason, they will not die. What is going on? The cockroaches of the Premier League. We talk about them, plus so many other things happening in Champions League.
And we are joined after that with Sam Coffey, of the U.S. Women's National Team of the Portland Torrents. We talked to her about the shirt tuck. Not too many NWSL players tucking in the shirt. We ask her all about it and the upcoming friendlies for the U.S. Women's National Team against Portugal. So all this and more today on the Cooligans.
All right, Christian, you can tell me who's right or wrong. I'm going to give you a scenario. You tell me who's right or wrong. All right, so wifey's out of town. All right. So my buddy hits me up and says, hey, you got plans tonight? I said, nah. He goes, yo, you want to grab a bite? I said, absolutely. All right. Now, he lives just outside the city. He lives in Yonkers. Okay. For those of you who don't know, that's just above the Bronx. So he's like, yo, I'm going to drive in. And I was like, oh, I'll just take the subway. And then if we go anywhere else afterwards, you could just drive me.
Yeah,
I said,
yeah.
I got you. Okay. Now, I pick the place. He's being really annoying about what he wants to eat. He's like, I don't know. I kind of want this. I want to be in this neighborhood. It's also New York Fashion Week. It's also Feast of San Gennaro. So I'm like, let's try to stay away from this one area. And he's like, I kind of want to hang out in that area. Super annoying, but I pick a place that he said was great. We split the meal. Okay, we both pay. But he loved it. He's like, well, this is a great choice. Okay, it's all right. I said, yo, I kind of want some dessert. And he said, yeah. I picked the restaurant. I also picked a gelato spot. And he goes, bro, this gelato's almost better than any gelato I even ever had in Italy.
Listen, you planned a lovely date for you and your boy.
I'm crushing this. Okay. Now, we split the meal. When it came time to gelato, he was kind of taking his time. So I said, I'll just pay. So I paid for the gelato. I picked both locations and I paid for the gelato, right? Now,
you're at least getting some head.
Right? I mean, give me something.
You're getting something. Yeah, you're doing great.
You're driving, but reach over. You know? I said, hey, I think it's gonna rain. It's also getting late. I said, yo, I'm gonna go home, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we were gonna go, it was starting to get late. It was like now, like close to midnight. I was like, I don't wanna go to another bar or whatever. It's just gonna get, you know what I mean? Like, and then I was at 2 a.m.
Yeah.
Wife is gonna be like, what time are you getting home? She's gonna start to worry. I was like, I got stuff to do tomorrow morning anyway. So I was like, yeah, I'm gonna just go home. Said, all right. I said, hey, you wanna drop me off? And he goes, that's like 15 minutes that way. Opposite the way I'm going. He goes, right. So that's gonna add like 35 minutes to my trip. And I go, I bought you gelato. You know, I'm not saying I did it so you would drive me home.
Yeah.
But I picked both places and I bought you gelato. Like, come on.
It's
a 15-minute drive. And he goes, it's a 25-minute drive. I look it up on Google Maps from where we were, 14-minute drive.
Mm. I mean,
he didn't drive me home. I had to take a $60 Uber home.
Yeah, that's pretty brutal. Yeah.
Now, who's right or wrong? I said he's wrong and I'm right. And he said it's unfair to ask to drive me back in a different direction than the way he's going. Because he already has a relatively long drive that's going to add more time. You mean you in the comfort of your own car for free?
Didn't he agree to drop you off?
No.
I thought you said like, oh, I'm going to take the subway and if anything, you'll drop me off.
No, not drop me off. If we go anywhere else.
Yeah.
Like if we go, like he did drive to the gelato spot.
I mean,
but Sob was also in the car. Like, I picked the gelato spot.
It's not about wrong or right.
Then are you even listening to the scenario?
Maybe he had to get home early.
He got nothing.
Maybe
he had nothing.
You know, there's
a
reason.
He had nothing.
He just did not want to take the time to drive.
He thought it was
had nothing happening the next morning.
It was putting him out of his way. That's the only reason he didn't. In fact, we swung by the stand. The gelato spot is like 3 blocks from the stand.
Right.
We swung by the stand just so I could use the bathroom. It was at a P-Row bed. And he's like well-known in the stand. So like we can hang out at this club and have a drink. I think he stayed there for like another 30, 40 minutes. So it's not like he had to get home.
I mean, it's not necessarily a right or wrong type of like question.
Mm-hmm. But if
scenario,
it was, what would you say?
But it's like the kind gesture is obviously whether you paid for the gelato or not. If it were me, I'm dropping you off. We're hanging out. And if it's only a 14 minutes away, that doesn't seem long enough. Once you get to like 30, 40 minutes, then I'm like, that's a...
Bro, even if it was 25, I'd be like, ah, that's adding almost an hour, right? 25 yeah. and then 25 back to where you are. Fine. It was 14 minutes. Doesn't even add half an hour. And you get to spend 14 minutes with your boy who just picked out a great gelato spot.
What a missed opportunity.
Yeah, honestly, as far as I'm concerned, you really dropped the ball. I didn't ask for head. You know what I mean?
I mean, we've been recording for just under 6 minutes, and it's been fantastic.
That's what I'm saying.
It's like an incredible experience.
Look at what I'm bringing to the table here. Imagine this with gelato that you love.
Sure.
Raved about the restaurant and the gelato.
So what does this mean for your friendship going forward?
It's over. It's a wrap. I'm never going to talk to the guy again. No. He's still my friend, but now I know. Now he can't be trusted.
Now you know the type.
He doesn't have friendship integrity.
Damn. No friendship integrity, yeah, bro? Dog.
It's all about him. It's a real me relationship.
I get it, bro. All right. Well, it happens. What are you going to do? You know, you learn some people's true colors, you know?
Where'd you guys go for dinner?
Why you won? On East Broadway. It's beautiful. One of the best Peking ducks you'll ever have. In fact, I even got them to take us downstairs to the basement to show us the Hong Kong Peking duck oven that they have. And I have a video of it if you want to see it later. It's pretty fucking dope.
Wow. All right.
Not enough. Not enough to give your boy a drive home.
There are people listening that have been
$59.40 for an Uber.
Wow. There are people listening. I'd be like, I would have given him a couple tugs.
Yeah.
Just out at of the
very least, you know what you do? At the very least, a hug where I can linger, you know?
All right. Well, RIP to that friendship. What are you gonna do?
It's a real shame.
All right. Welcome to the Cooligans, everybody. My name is Christian Polanco.
Hey, I'm Alexis Guerreros.
Crazy hot show today.
Oh,
because
I'm excited for today's show. We got a lot to talk about.
Alexis, he has lost all joy in his life. That's why he is the way he is. But I'm excited because we are joined, we're going to be joined a little bit later by the one and only Olympian gold medalist, the one and only Sam Coffey of the U.S. Women's National Team and the Portland Thorns. So we'll be.
Damn, what a hot show. Why aren't you more excited about this, Christian?
Oh, I could ask you that question, Alexis. Please show some excitement and reference for Sam Coffey.
No, she's the best. Happy to have her on the show.
So we'll be chatting with her later about the U.S. Women's National Team upcoming friendlies again. Portugal and everything going on in her life. So let's start today with Champions League because Champions League has returned. Let's start with Liverpool. Liverpool win it late again. Are they this good or are they just lucky? That's why it is today's top topic presented by Buchanan's Blended Scotch Whiskey, an official FIFA World Cup 26 supporter. Nos vamos al Mundial with a Bucanita on hand.
This is the top topic.
Let's go. Are they this good or are they just lucky? I think it's a blend of the two, but I'm going to say it's 40% good.
All right.
60% lucky. At some point, he can't keep getting away with this.
They can't keep getting away with it. Well, Liverpool, this is what, their fourth or fifth game of...
Four out of six, if I'm not mistaken. Four out of six games.
Right.
So they've played where they've won late.
Yes, well, they've had two goal leads in three matches this season, and they have 9 points out of those.
So
matches.
So
they won all those games, and we're recording this on Wednesday, just so everybody knows. So we're recording after the second day of Champions League matches. So we just watched them play against Atletico Madrid, and it's. There's something this season that's odd is that it's like that sort of hammer of like control that they would have last season. I mean, obviously Champions League is its own, you know, it's a different beast and anything can kind of happen in these matches. But in the Premier League, it was pretty solid and not really any kind of confusion or matches like this that consistently. So they are up. Well, they were up by two, then 2-1, then 2-2, then end up winning 3-2.
On a Virgil
and why? Why is this? Is this a pattern that is going to keep developing? Do they have issues defensively? obviously the midfield
well, you have
looks
to say
a little
they
bit different.
Do have issues defensively, right? Because they keep giving up these goal leads.
Sure.
So at some point, that snake will bite you. You know what I mean? I think even, right, people were talking about Leverkusen was the last time we saw this when they went invincible, right? And now Florian Wirtz is there. So what happened, right? Mm-hmm. Did you get bitten by a radioactive Florian Wirtz? I think what happened during the Leverkusen, and I remember watching a lot of these games, it would be like 0-0 or 1-1. It wouldn't be like, you know, they wouldn't let the other team come back and then
they weren't conceding a lot and scoring a whole bunch of goals and stuff like that. Yeah.
So the other thing about them was that they had a strong defensive prowess for most of those matches. I wouldn't say all of them because there was a couple where it was pretty crazy. But Liverpool is showing you, okay, one, yes, they have the ability to come back, but it feels more of like a cardiac kid kind of a thing.
Yeah.
This feels like more of the cardiac birds, you know?
Liver bird, yeah. It's not as, it's easily not as sustainable, right? I mean, they can't. Seemingly they can't keep playing like this.
No, and if you keep giving up like, goal leads, then you're gonna. If you keep giving up leads, then you're gonna lose.
Arne Slot has to be like, guys,
yeah,
enough of this.
We didn't draw none of this up.
So the you know, maybe there's like a mentality thing this early in the season, new players getting settled. I mean, even the lineup itself, right? I mean, the back line.
This was Isak's first time playing with the team. We're not even talking about it.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, he wasn't super impactful in the game. But is it Frimpong, the new right back? Is it just a different midfield? Obviously, Florian Wirtz is getting a lot of attention. Because people feel like he's underperforming or he's definitely not worth the transfer fee.
The moment he's given an opportunity to shine, he doesn't.
Sure. But
and then, he did that again in this match.
But then if they keep winning, it's like, all right, well, complain all you like. Our team is winning.
It's like, look, we'll get to you in a minute.
we're not even in the situation where I'm an issue and I'm a concern. So I wonder.
But I think the last time we saw this was in the Premier League. We saw this was like maybe the Fergie era where they got a lot of time. And you mentioned Arnie time.
Yeah, yeah.
As opposed to Fergie time. I could see that being part of it where maybe they're getting a lot of just extra, or maybe this is tactical. They're very smart about drawing a lot of fouls and, you know, sort of earning that a little additional time to win those games. But the last time we truly saw this was Leverkusen going invincible in Bundesliga. And you just don't get, you know, for the most part, Bundesliga, you get more easier games than you would in the Premier League. The Premier League from top to bottom is stacked with very strong teams. So it's very hard. And I feel like those little mistakes become huge, huge sort of glaring issues in the Premier League faster than any other league. So I just don't see this being sustainable. I don't see this as being a thing. And at the end of the day, I think this is actually even though, yes, they are coming back and getting 9 points from nine times they've given up two goal leads, it still feels like this is a major issue that needs to be fixed. Defensively, they are nowhere near what they looked like before. And everyone assumed getting rid of Trent Alexander-Arnold that he was the problem.
No, right. And again,
what's happening now?
There seems to be, I mean, how concerned can we be or how much can we really ring any alarms when they won every single game that they played this season? So right. I don't know. It's just an odd thing for a team that is undefeated.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, Arne Slot definitely is trying to kind of figure it out. But I would assume that the changing of just getting rid of players like Luis Diaz, obviously the passing of Diogo Jota, like, you know, it could be psychologically that maybe not sort of where they want to be right now.
I can see that. I didn't think about the Diogo Jota thing. That can absolutely still be affecting them. But what do you think? You think they're that good or they're just this lucky?
I do think that they are that good. I mean, it's hard to say that because then they just played Burnley and got a handball that was comical, and they obviously did not deserve to win that game. I mean, Burnley deserved the result in that game. If it
Burnley
wasn't
should have taken a point
that stupid,
away,
you know, stupid result, a stupid decision. But it's a little bit of both, I guess. But
what percentage would you give? Like I did, I said it was 40% good, 60% luck.
I'm gonna say. I'm going to say the opposite. I'm going to say 60% good and 40% luck.
All right. Way to be a contrarian to my point. Very cool.
Okay. This is first take, bro.
Yeah, damn.
We didn't mention.
How could you say it? Are you crazy?
People don't know, but Molly Karam is joining the show soon.
Yeah.
Big surprise. That's right. That's why she left first
That's
take.
That's why.
She was like, I need to talk about soccer with two comedians.
It's been too long I've been at this network.
2 days a week. So The let's move on to a couple other Champions League results. Or even just controversy. We got to talk about Real Madrid because this is getting ridiculous. And honestly, sometimes it feels like the Champions League is refereed with a different set of rules. Like there's a different rule book. And I understand that some leagues in general in different countries referee a little bit differently.
Yeah, they call certain things certain ways.
But UEFA should be some standard. Across,
I think there is. That's Real Madrid's allowed to get away with whatever they want, and then there's everyone else,
right? What is the? There's like the meme, Madrid penalty by Madrid. People always put it in like all these like different TikToks and stuff. But this handball from
if you are a tinfoil hat wearing. Anti-Real Madrid conspiracy theorist.
The witch, that's who I am.
Yeah. Then this was exhibit A or exhibit, D, C, whatever, Z at this point for you.
Right.
This was another example of like, well, it's getting hard to prove that there isn't a conspiracy against the teams playing Real Madrid.
Who was the, who got the yellow? Who got the handball? What was the name of the player? Facundo Medina. He was the defender.
Yeah. Okay.
That blocked the ball against Vinicius and got the handball. And if we might be seeing some photos right now on screen, but he clearly, it's not even about clearly.
Well, the rule is like your hand you're bracing your fall from.
Yes,
but that wasn't the hand he hit.
So the ball is on his inside, basically his left side of his body. He stops it with his left leg.
Right.
And the ball takes a bounce. He braces himself with the hand behind him, his right arm,
mm-hmm.
puts it down to the ground. The ball, his hand is also going down in a very much a natural position.
Both hands are going down to brace himself. The right one goes first.
Yes.
The left hand is coming down, makes contact with the ball that's kind of behind him.
It clearly
it's next to him, but kind of behind him.
It's somewhat a obviously helped him control the ball, kind of a thing, and maintain possession. But very much natural. It's a sort of a bang bang play. Like it hits his leg, puts the arm down, then the other hand goes down, and it hits mm-hmm. the ball. Nothing intentional about it. Very much a natural play. Everybody would have understood if you do not call this a penalty. And then we have some level of precedent, especially recently, the Mexico U.S. game in the Gold Cup final.
Right.
I forgot the name of the player. But palms the ball legit, right. And they said that he was bracing his arm. I would say that is more a penalty.
That was more egregious than this. Yeah, for sure.
And
it's hard for me to say like, all right, I waited. I was like, you know what, Christina Uncle got this.
Yeah,
she's gonna break down some weird rule. She's gonna say based on the rules, uh-huh. based on the way the law is written. Blah, blah. And even she was like, hey, man. Hey,
I don't know that dude.
I don't know what this dude looking at, yo.
I can't believe he passed ref school.
Yeah, no, that dude. He not invited to the ref cookout, bro.
We don't.
We do it every year. He can't come,
we
bro.
We done with him. No, but that's how bad it was. And Mike Grella, your co-worker.
He said it a little differently. He said, what if I had no filter?
So let's play that real quick.
I mean, listen, if we're going to have a good show, let's call it what it is. This is a robbery. It's Real Madrid in the Champions League. It happens all the time. We see it over and over again. How four guys could sit in a VAR room and see this and say, yeah, I still think that's a penalty. You got to start to say it's ridiculous now. And it affects the game because Marseille, with a man up with 10, 15 minutes to go, could get something out of the game. I thought they performed good enough to get a point on the road and they were robbed. That's what it is.
So Mike Grella, going off and being like, let's just be for real.
Yeah.
It's Real Madrid.
Hey, I'm gonna call it as I see it.
They get all the calls.
Yeah.
This
ain't new.
they got
a cheater gonna cheat.
Marseille got robbed. Yeah. And the whole thing.
I put Marseille got robbed on Threads.
Yeah.
Remember Threads? open that up for the first time in a while. But even I said, like, clearly this is
especially on the day. that the first ever American scores at the Bernabeu against Real Madrid in the Champions League, bro. Can't up how you how
they just don't want us to win, dog. And what a tough interview for Tim Weah afterwards, where you know he wants to have a good time.
Exactly.
And he's like, I'm really happy I got to score. But unfortunately, I wish we would have gotten the win. You know what I mean? You got to do that second part.
And they were up a man because Danny Carvajal gets a red for a dunk. I mean, it's just I hate it when it's like the older. If you're over 30 years old, you can't be getting red cards.
You
like
got to know better.
You've been in those situations. Mm-hmm. You've been the one that's been that they're trying to rile you up. You have the experience.
Right.
Why is he? And then the goalkeeper is immediately. I mean, he got it was such a. Cheek to cheek graze.
Rolled out. He held his face.
You know how wrestlers give themselves a cut and they start bleeding all of a sudden. Yeah. I thought the goalkeeper
hit himself with a folded chair. I thought that was a bit much.
It was unreal. But that's
it's also Danny Carvajal. So he comes in for Trent, who gets injured pretty early in the match.
Yeah, yeah.
Something looked like something up with his knee. I don't know. They haven't said yet. But I'm thinking to myself, they're actually in better position because Danny Carvajal is a better defender. He's been there at the highest levels. He probably doesn't have it to do 90 every game in and out, but to come in for 80 minutes or whatever it was, he'll be all right. And bro, he's the one who ends up getting a red card.
Yeah.
And still Marseille couldn't win.
Yeah. I mean, it was going
to
be.
It did also seem to me, and again, this is all allegedly, I don't know. You know what I mean? I'm just telling you what I'm seeing.
Yeah.
It seemed to me that the refereeing took a slightly different approach towards the end of the match. As soon as Real Madrid goes down to 10, it felt to me like all of a sudden they were getting a lot of the momentum of the calls.
Mm.
So I'm just telling you, it just seemed to me.
Well, we had this conversation when we had our comedian friend Alex Falcone of mm-hmm. Is It a Scam? Yep. And he had talked about refereeing and how refereeing is so heavily influenced by the home fans,
right?
And given this,
that you can pressure
that
the
you
referees.
Can pressure the referee, yeah. And then you would imagine there'd be some sort of impact and effect on their decisions and stuff like that. You hate to see that. You know, I don't want to believe that. And this is the thing, especially with Barcelona and Real Madrid fans, they're constantly being like Real Madrid gets all the calls and blah blah blah. But this one felt so ridiculous, and Mike Grella's comment specifically about that he can't believe that four referees and in the VAR booth look at that and they say, hey, go take another look at that because we think that's a penalty. That's where, because it wasn't called a penalty immediately. And that's the frustrating part, that this feels like one of those games that were was re-refereed with that decision. And I want to see this more from UEFA because I don't see it enough. I want to see, and because it happens in MLS very often, mm-hmm. I want to see VAR suggest a penalty or suggest a call and the center ref say no, I don't think that's the correct call. And I don't even know how many times this even happened across all of UEFA. It just does not happen enough, and there has to be some moment where the ref says,
you want the ref to stand on business.
Yeah, like, I want the ref to be like, yo, I understand what you guys are saying. We'll talk about this over dinner.
Yeah.
But I think you're wrong.
I'm
here.
Not driving you home, but I'll deliver the dinner. Yeah, I mean, I guess I get it. But at the same time, it's like if the technology is there, it should be used correctly. And I think that's what Grella was trying to say. Like, how is it you have this many people and yet you all still get it wrong?
Yeah. I mean, it's three of us in this room right now. None of us thought,
bro,
it was a penalty. I can't believe you could find three people in any room in the world that all agree that was a penalty.
What if Christine Uncle from home is just VAR? What if that's it? What if we figured it out?
A remote gig, bro.
You got to watch every game.
So, okay. Another crazy game. Juve played against Borussia Dortmund.
This game was absolutely incredible. It was one of my favorite games I've seen in a long time.
And Dortmund are winning. They're chilling, bro. I can't.
They couldn't Liverpool.
They couldn't Liverpool it. But this has been unfortunately, you know, kind of a common story with Dortmund. And defensively, they've had issues for pretty much the last like two to three years. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, they just haven't found a back line that can compete with the rest of Bundesliga, let alone Champions League. Yeah. So they have a lot to figure out. But I wonder here, who is this result more disappointing for? Like, are Juve and Dortmund basically right now on the same level?
as even with expectations of what they want to get from Champions League.
I feel like Dortmund is in a sort of an in-between period. You know what I mean? Like, they don't have, like, the obvious big name that's a young player that's a star that they're going to sell, where it feels like they were in this mode of just constantly having that. But if you're Juve, can you use these last two matches, right? They had an absolute stellar win against Inter in the Derby d'Italia this weekend. And then they have this magical comeback in two goals in stoppage time to beat equalize the match against Dortmund. Yeah. Does this spur on, a renewed ability this season? You know what I mean? Where it seemed like, man, we started out weird, and all of a sudden, boom, you got these two incredible matches. Yeah. Back to back, it's wild. And for them to find that magic again against a team like Dortmund, which, again, that's a much higher level than Inter Milan right now.
Okay, yeah.
You could say that, right? I mean, maybe it's pretty even. But still, nonetheless, Dortmund seemingly had control of this game. To let it slip at the end is crazy.
Yeah, yeah. I know they're very disappointed. Another wild result was Benfica Karabag. Karabag have never won in their history in Champions League, and they beat Benfica 3-2.
And
they were down 2-0.
Yeah.
So Benfica was up 2-0 at home. And where does Karabag play? Where am I forgetting?
Azerbaijan?
Maybe.
I believe it's Azerbaijan.
Okay. Yes.
It is Azerbaijan.
Yeah.
What do I not know that took place of that memory? Baku, if I'm not mistaken.
This was a unbelievable.
I'll give you $1,000 if you can name a player on Karabag.
No, not happening. Fatmob's going to help me.
I feel bad for Benfica. I feel worse for their manager, Bruno Lage, who you may remember from his time managing, obviously, Benfica way back in the day, but managing Wolverhampton Wolves. The Wolverhampton manager. He got sacked immediately after the match.
Yeah, they were like, no, this is way too embarrassing. We cannot do it.
He made the players go to the fans and stand there in front of the supporters and kind of, they waved their fingers
at
them.
They got a little pow-pow.
Yeah. Everybody line up, you're getting a pow-pow. And that seemed like to be the last thing he did as a manager.
Yeah.
Was that because he immediately gets sacked. And who do they bring in?
Oh, you know who they got to bring in.
The guy who was just at Porto waving at his beloved fans.
Mm-hmm.
Jose Mourinho.
Jose Mourinho is going to be the manager at Benfica.
This is... I know not everyone follows the Portuguese. This is like the worst thing to ever happen to Porto fans.
This is a blood becoming a crip, bro.
Yo, for real.
So, yeah, this is... I had seen a comment from him. He said that who would turn down the manager job at Benfica? Not me. Is that what he said? Which is,
bro, he just loves burning bridges, this guy.
So he got obviously sacked from Fenerbahce not too long ago, and now is back in Portugal. Obviously, he won Champions League with Porto when he was their manager, which propelled his career and brought him obviously to Spain, to England, to Italy.
One of the people on his coaching squad was Andre Villas-Boas. Remember him, AVB? He's now the president of Porto. But his job when he worked with Jose Mourinho at Porto was he was like the spy. He would be the one that pretended to be a tourist on vacation.
I love it.
At these other clubs.
He's just like,
like let him walk around and look at training.
I'm just a man in my Birkenstocks.
nah, brother. Like, hey, man, you're very clearly a Portuguese guy. But Wagwan, Estoril. Nah, me want to watch training. And they're like, nah, you can't do that. Please stop. But I think
it's getting offensive, sir.
Dude, I've met you before. This was his job, was to spy on other teams. He would get training documents and all this.
Yeah.
So I wonder if like he knows what Mourinho's kind of going to do next. Jeez. And like, I wonder that this is going to make this into a much more of a telenovela.
Andres Villas-Boas was in Mossad, I guess.
Oh, wow.
I don't know what.
Is that worse than what I did? Possibly.
So, no, I'm excited to just see Mourinho Closer, as opposed to playing in managing in Turkey. It should be exciting, and obviously him back in Champions League. So the storylines and then the topics for our show are just going to continue to get.
Oh, buddy. I'm going to look up Benfica's schedule. What are the Champions League?
So we do that before we wrap up the segment?
Let's see. Like, what's the one match I want to see?
Matches. Here we go. They play... Chelsea's next.
Oh, buddy. So he coached so many teams.
That's going to be fun, right?
They
got Newcastle. Yep. They got Bayer Leverkusen. Benfica has a really...
Wait a minute. Benfica is the one that beat Fenerbahce in the qualifying to get into... The Champions League.
Oh, I didn't know that. All right.
Jeez. So, yeah, they got Newcastle, Leverkusen, Ajax, Napoli, Juventus, and Real Madrid.
That's going to be a fun one.
Jose the novela.
Tour. Him going on tour.
Mean all his exes, bro.
he's going to go see all the children he left behind and all these different...
What's he going to say? Remember when he said the Turkish league smells bad and it's gray?
Yeah.
What's he going to say about Portugal, bro?
We shall see. All right.
Right now, it is time to announce the winner of our Premier League Fan Fest Avery Dennison shirt giveaway. The Premier League's morning. We're going to be there this weekend, but
we'll be hosting, baby.
We'll announce the giveaway on Monday, and we can announce...
Now, it is time to pick a winner.
Our two winners.
Or announce the winners, because they have been picked.
Yes, we did a random raffle from a raffle website. We put all the names...
Totally legit. we picked a winner from our YouTube and a winner from our Instagram post. We asked you to comment FanFest. If you commented FanFest, you qualified.
Right.
But the winners are... Why don't we do YouTube first?
YouTube. The winner on YouTube is... Carter, put in a drum roll right here. The winner on YouTube is Brooke and Zero. Shout out to Brooke and Zero.
That's the shirt you're winning right there, baby. Yes. Well, it looks like that. That's not the actual shirt.
somebody in the comments did say, can we get it with your sweat on it?
Ooh.
Obviously watching the James Sands episode.
Wow. So you're going to have to run around for quite a long time. Or me, just a little bit. All right. And we still have one more winner. We got to pick someone from the Instagram. And from the Instagram, it is...
More Man Max.
Hey.
So shout out to both of you. Thank you so much. We will be contacting both of you on how to ship that to you. So but congratulations. And if you want to get this shirt, you can order it. They are limited edition. They are available on... The link is in the description in this video. Go to our Instagram. It's I believe it's shop.mblex.com, but it's an Avery Dennison shirt, and it's absolutely fire.
It's so dope.
I love every Fan Fest, we pick one of these up, and they are dope. They're like one of our favorites of the collection, and it's also a very a sentimental piece of like
a little time capsule.
Hey, we went to this this Fan Fest, was great. These are the great memories I have of this moment.
Of course.
So I highly recommend you pick one up if you didn't get a chance to win.
Go to the link if you did not win. If you are not Brooke and Zero or More Max Man, More Man Max,
yeah,
then go to the link. Get yourself a shirt. So dope. We've got a pair because we are going to be at Kansas City this weekend.
Exactly. So we'll see you there. Absolutely thrilled about our next guest.
Wow.
I mean, you know, when it comes to, stars coming through the show.
Uh-huh.
But not only just stars, but people that have silverware. Okay.
Bro,
that
also have captains.
Okay. She's wearing a pirate hat. Right?
A bird on her shoulder. This is intimidating, bro. Because I've seen this player play and I'm like, yo, you can tell when you ain't doing the right thing in front of her. She's like, I'm gonna remember this for halftime speech.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
You may know her of the NWSL champion Portland Thorns, and you may know her of the 2024 gold medalist, the U.S. Women's National Team in soccer at the Olympics. The one and only Sam Coffey. Sam, what's up?
Thank you guys for having me. I wish I had access to a machine like that. I could have a button of my own to press, but
we got it, bro. We got it for you.
You know what? We're sending you the board.
You know what? It's yours. You can have it.
You know, that's how tough you are on the pitch. We're like, we got to send her all the equipment.
Does it make you feel more at home when you hear us pronounce it coffee?
I mean, absolutely. I mean, for a second, I'm like, is this Portland or is this Westchester County? You know, it does. It's like a certain bit of home when you say it like that. I love
perfect.
It.
Perfect. Yeah. We'll start there. Our studio. Oh, I just
there we go.
Pen.
Who needs pens?
Our studio is in right near Times Square in New York. I'm originally from Brooklyn. Alexis is originally from Newark, New Jersey, but currently lives in Brooklyn. And you are a New Yorker.
I am.
And this is kind of where I want to start, because when it comes to New York, people don't necessarily think soccer. They don't. The New Jersey has all the footballers that come out of there. They have all this. The
Tyler
academies.
Adams is repping Wappingers Falls. I think that's how people found out Wappingers Falls exists.
Yeah.
And then 100%. We looked you up. Dobbs Ferry, Sleepy Hollow area.
Sleepy Hollow is my hometown, born and raised. Very proud to be from Sleepy.
I live right over in Rockland County, over the Tappan Zee.
Okay. Yep. Okay. Well, formerly the Tappan Zee. It's always the Tappan Zee. They tried changing it, and I think my parents might be a part of like the committee that's like Tappan Zee forever t-shirts.
Remember when they fixed it and they got rid of those weird wind things they had on the side? I'm like, it doesn't look like a spaceship anymore.
Yeah, I know. I go over it still and I'm like, what is this?
So
like,
can you talk a little bit about growing up in and playing soccer in New York? Or were there certain schools that you played? What was the journey like?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Not a lot of, I would say, big time soccer players are coming out of New York, and hopefully that narrative is starting to change. But I did have to travel to New Jersey for most of my club soccer career as a young player. So I spent a lot of time in Bergen County and Morristown, New Jersey, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah.
Never as far as Newark, thankfully.
All right. No, wild disrespectful. I'm gonna call my cousin to go steal a car in Sleepy Hollow now. Just to
hey, you know, we frequent often. We frequent Newark often, but you know, I've seen all there is to see, I think. But I mean, I love Sleepy with all my heart. I visit as much as I can. I'm super proud to be a part of that community. But yeah, growing up playing was a bit of a challenge. I think there wasn't a ton of high level teams in the area. So I had to kind of get creative and maybe travel a little bit further. But it does really seem like that landscape is changing, which is really exciting. But I have a lot of pride for where I'm from and love giving back in any way I can and visiting as much as I can as well. So, yeah.
I think you're a really good example of some things that we talk about. It feels like, because it's a big country and there's so many scouts now and there's so many eyes, especially in the women's game in the U.S., it feels like we know all the best talent. But you kind of did a more creative route to get sort of eyes seen on you, not just traveling far, not as far as Newark, but traveling far to get seen. But also you went to BC first, right? You went to Boston College before you ended up going to Penn State, and you had to sort of prove your worth every step of the way. Are you looking at your career as saying like, good, maybe I could be an example that maybe we should be looking a little bit deeper in some of these, you know, areas that we don't always search for talent?
100%. I think I'm really proud in the way that I've kind of taken like this path less traveled, if you will. Like, I think there's route one to success or to the top, and some girls take that. I've definitely been this kind of winding path, and even transferring is a huge part of that. But even when I visited Sleepy after we won gold in 2024, I went and we did like a little celebration there, which is really sweet and embarrassing in a lot of ways. But I shared with, you know, some of the little kids that had come out in their little jerseys and things like that, that there's like no one way to get to where you want to go, whatever that might be. Like, there could have been so many moments in my own career where I could have thought like, it's just not going to happen for me, or this isn't making sense, or this isn't how this person did it, and to let that discourage me. But I think instead that's become a strength in a lot of ways and something that I'm really, really proud of. And I believe every step of my journey has been exactly as it's supposed to be and has led me to where I am now.
Amazing. And I think I had seen a, I don't know if it was in your like Wikipedia or something, but you were the like MVP all 4 years in your high school, or like best player or something along those lines? Is that accurate?
I mean, I don't know. I don't think that's
Yo,
true.
She knows.
No, I swear. Well, you think I'm like frequenting my Wikipedia page, and I'm like, yeah, like, that's really good.
Just making sure it's all right.
So, but I wonder if there's moments, if like when I hear like, you know, the best player all 4 years, I'm like, all right, is were you too big of a fish in this small pond? Did you even feel like, oh man, I'm not getting good enough as quickly as I want to be because I'm kind of like dominating?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely did feel like a small pond at times, but kind of like I just talked about, I think a lot of those things quickly became like a strength for me because it meant I had to put even more time in on my own, or maybe go try to train with some boys teams in the area, kind of get creative with what my own development looked like, traveling far, not as far as Newark, but far.
Say it every time.
Yeah, like whenever it took to get me to that next level, I was going to do, and I wasn't going to let my zip code or whatever it might be get in the way of like what I knew I wanted to do and what my dreams were.
But you never told your parents like, can we move to New Jersey? No. Can we go to Southern California?
How about Wakey Hollow? Have we thought about
that? I've never heard that one. That's good. No, never can we move, especially not to New Jersey. I mean, as a native New Yorker, there's a deep loathing.
I love it.
A loathing of New Jersey that will always remain. I wouldn't trade, my upbringing and Sleepy for the world. Obviously, maybe there are some hoops and ladders to jump through with soccer and development and training like that. But, I think this next generation, that's totally shifted. And the girls have so much more opportunities than I think I even had at that age. So that's so exciting to see. But no, I have so much pride for where I'm from and love, again, being able to like give back to them and the community that raised me in any small way. And I wouldn't trade it for the world.
It's really good. I try to think about sometimes like the athlete mentality, and we talk about so many athletes. It feels like, and maybe this is where, you know, you sort of get a little bit of a leg up. You have to have people around you that are willing to say you're not playing your hardest or you didn't give it your all in those moments. You come from a very sort of different background than I think most of us, in that your father and now your sister, very accomplished sports writers. So yeah. when your dad in the car driving home from the game told you that you didn't play well or you could have done a little better, did he do it in like 2,000 words with a full title?
Without the stat sheet, the highlights.
Yeah. Yeah. No run-on sentences, perfect grammar.
Third person.
No. For me, the criticism didn't come in post-game. I have the best parents, like just the best parents. I could spend this whole podcast talking about how, you know, just the way I was raised and the love in our household. And they were not the type to get into me after a game. They were just always supportive. I think they saw some of the, I mean, I'm sure you guys know, growing up in, you know, New York, New Jersey area, just like the crazy soccer parents on the sidelines screaming at the ref or, you know, at their own kid or at someone else's kid. And I think they saw that and they were like, no.
Yeah.
And they did things very differently, which I think only nourished my own love for the game and really allowed me to just like focus on, I mean, one, they knew I was hardest on myself as it was, and like they didn't need to say anything to add to that. But only, you know, of course, pushing me to be my best in the way parents do and not coddling me in any way. But, you know, I grew up with so much love and support and encouragement. I would say if there was criticism that came out, it was after I wrote a paper. Or if I, had like an English project or an essay, and my dad's like, why would you use that word here? Or I'd send it to him in college and ask him to like send it back with some edits, and the whole paper is like red and things crossed out.
Just
and
lines
like,
everywhere.
He's like, yeah.
He's like gentle parenting with everything, and then he's throwing your homework in the fireplace.
Yeah, yeah. He sends you a video of it going in a shredder, and he's like, try again.
It's like, okay, I made a couple edits. The thing's rewritten. I'm like, oh man, I guess this just wasn't good.
It's kind of wild because it's like Sam Coffey was essentially gentle parented and is like a dog on the pitch.
Yeah, you know? Where'd you get this energy and attitude from?
I mean, like, look, gentle parenting, like, I don't want to put it as gentle, but like, my parents weren't telling me what a piece of crap I was after games and things like that. I mean,
must be nice.
I'd love for you to meet my mom. I really would love for you to meet my mom for 5 minutes.
I mean, look, you guys, I would love to. I mean, I don't know. I do think like where I'm from does add an element of that. Not that, Sleepy Hollow is Manhattan by any means,
yeah.
but, But I definitely do think that adds, you know, a kind of, just like a certain bite and attitude to game. But
I mean, you can talk about this, and I'm sure this will kind of organically go there. But you are obviously captain of the Portland Thorns, and you also a captain in your younger teams as well. I mean, this is another thing where leadership seems to come very naturally for you. So. Especially, you know, younger players don't tend to get this kind of these are not necessarily put in these positions. Coaches don't really give that responsibility to younger players. But you clearly proved yourself very quickly. And you know, it's obviously even for us watching you and just talking to you, I'm like, it's like a natural maybe on the national team as well.
100%.
You know, of getting the armband too. So where did some of that come from? Because it seems, pretty natural for you.
Yeah, I think I've always just like loved the opportunity in leadership. And I think the moments in my career I've like leaned most into that is, and especially now, I think it feels like I'm coming into myself most as like both a player and a person. I think even when I got to the Thorns as a rookie and you're like looking around and it's just like Becky Sauerbrunn and Christine Sinclair and Megan Klingenberg and like Crystal Dunn, you're just like, I'm like, oh my gosh, like how is this my life now? And I feel like you're faced with a choice, especially as a young player, of like, am I just gonna follow, which is so important, but also like, what do I have to bring? And like, what do I have to offer here? And if I don't offer what I think my strengths are, then I'm kind of doing not only the team a disservice, but also myself and, you know, the people that raised me and poured into me and supported me to get here. And so I think from the second I became a pro, that really was my mindset. Like, I always want to influence in whatever way that looks. If that's like the other rookies in my class or any teammate or maybe someone not seeing a lot of game time. Like, I think we all are in positions of influence if we see it that way. And we often don't. But like, I always want to use that as something that is positive and can have a good impact on others in the team. And so I've really just done my best to lean into that.
What made you become a defensive midfielder? Because that seems like a position that a coach asks you to play once and then you shine and now you're stuck there. That doesn't seem like you didn't grow up with defensive midfielder posters on your wall.
No. Well, I mean, like Busquets and even Pirlo, like there are some that I'm like, oh my God.
Sure. Okay. Do you see yourself as more a regista than a defensive midfielder?
No.
Okay. I was going to say that.
No, God, no. I mean, come on. I was like a 8'10" all growing up, especially in college. Like I was a pretty traditional 10. I always say I didn't really start defending till I went to Penn State. I had no interest. I like wasn't about it. I thought that was someone else's job.
I've never even seen that side of the field.
I don't know what happens back there.
What is a 1v1 on the defensive side of things? Like I'm good. But then I went to Penn State and I say this all the time, but like that decision I think is one of the, if not the biggest reason like I am where I am today and totally reshaped my life and my development. And again, learned how to defend. And I'm still learning, of course, always. But it wasn't until I got to the Thorns as a rookie where our coach at the time, Rian Wilkinson, told me that she saw me as a 6 and she wants to try me out here. And she thought that a lot of my skill sets maybe fit the profile of like what she's looking for in a 6. And I'm like, girl, you could play me in goal. I'll be the ref. Like, yeah.
I'll be the 13. I don't
yeah,
the 12.
Like, I'm, you know, and of course in the moment I'm like, me? Like a 6? Really? Because I had played it a little bit in college because I was forced to due to injury and things like that. And I was not expecting to fall in love with it the way that I did. And similar to leadership, I think the more that I grow as a 6, the more I feel like I come to myself fully as a player. And yeah, maybe I'm not the flashy Busquets, like, incredible on the ball and all these things, but I do find so much pride in being both like so front-footed and aggressive defensively, kind of that dog. And then also like, how can I be this liaison that connects our team and like helps set the tempo and be a 6 that distributes and has, you know, really good passing ability. And those are always goals and things I'm trying to improve. I'll really pride myself on.
Let me ask you a quick follow-up. I watched a YouTube sort of tactical video, randomly got recommended to me, and it was about defensive midfielders. And it started with saying, being a central defensive midfielder is the easiest job on the pitch. It said, ooh, all you have to do is follow the press and turn and pass. Now, I just want to hear, what's your reaction to that? Because that seems insane to me.
No, I mean, look, there's so many hard positions on the field that I have so much respect for. I do feel like being a six is one of the most difficult and also the most overlooked, which is one of the reasons I love it. Like, I think there's such a beauty in, like, it is so such a nuanced position and the details matter so much. But like, if you're a normal spectator, you're not watching them and you're not like, oh my gosh, like what a one touch pass into space or like what a last ditch tackle like that led to the counterattack. But like, those are like my bread and butter that I've grown to just love so much. And like, that get me so fired up. And I love that element of the position that like, I'm doing my job if like, you don't really notice me. If I'm setting my teammates up to be the best that they can be and set them up for success in their next action. But I would totally disagree with that narrative. But it's the easiest. I think generally it's the most crowded part of the field. You're having to break that first line of pressure. You're having to protect your back line. Like it's not easy. They're kind of easy. They're doing a better job than me.
I love just the joy that you are speaking about it. Because I saw a video recently we have a friend, Expected Own Goals. There was a video that they showed you a goal that happened and you were kind of analyzing it. This must have been 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, something like that. And the giddiness and joy that you are, you're happy somebody asked you about it. And this is the thing with defensive midfield, being overlooked. And this is your opportunity to be like, you see what I did?
Right?
This goal wouldn't happen.
They'd be nothing without me.
No, it wasn't for me. That's not me. But I love that it is like this kind of unspoken position. Like, again, it's just, I feel like I'm doing I tend to rate myself game to game based off like how the people around me play and how I'm best setting them up for success. Because I think that is so much like the importance and job of a six is this link. Like, you're really in the center of everything and you have this opportunity to play the front foot to your outside back or play your 10 in the pocket so they can turn and they can drive or find longer balls or whatever. Protect your back line so that they're not isolated in 1v1 situations. Like, if I'm doing that for my teammates and they're able to thrive, then I've done my job and I don't need anybody to know that.
I love that. Cause in the video you had said, it wasn't a thing I necessarily noticed, but you said that the player, so the other team had the ball. So you said the player had their back to you. So you knew to press in that moment because she didn't know that you were there. You were there.
Yeah.
And it's essentially what led to the goal. And I'm just like, all right. I mean, I'm watching the game, but Coffee, she is experiencing the game.
There's something else happening. Yeah, you're watching it differently than we do, for sure.
So,
and that's okay. I mean, that's the beauty of it, you know. That Sofen took someone 1v1 and did her thing that she does so brilliantly, and like that is the highlight of the clip. But for me, like that is those bread and butter moments where I'm like, yeah, like I can get after someone here. I can make a big tackle here. I can help connect the lines or transition the team. Like, those are the parts of being a six, and all the parts. I just love.
This is why you're gonna win us a World Cup again.
Yeah.
All right.
That's the plan. That's the plan.
I might start talking in my shirt.
And that's what I wanted to ask about. We had a question from one of our fans, our Patreon, our supporters group. You guys have the Riveters and stuff like that, but we have Gully Squad.
I love that.
Lure McCoy. She asked the question: what inspired the tuck shirt? Look, I'm sure you get this question a lot, but I do.
And I do like answering this question because it's not something I always did, which might seem surprising. And now looking back, I'm like, I should have always done this. This like fits me so well. But I got called up to my first camp as a rookie in like May. And I was with the team as a training player before they went to World Cup qualifying in Mexico. And then they were going to go to Mexico and I was going to go back with the Thorns. So it was like a week and a half, 2 weeks. I was with my first experience with the national team. So it's just like dream come true. It was an incredible moment. Camp was great. It was just like an amazing first experience. The team goes off to Mexico. I go back. I actually meet the Thorns in LA for a game. And it was kind of before that game. I remember we were in our white kits on the road. And I think, like, genuinely, like, I come out of the bathroom and, like, my shirt was accidentally tucked, like, into my shorts. And I was like, oops, like, I look silly. But then I, like, looked at myself in the mirror and I was like, this kind of works for you. Like, okay. This is kind of fitting. Like,
this is who you are, Sam. As you're talking to someone in the mirror.
This is who you've always been. Why are you hiding? Like, and I mentioned I went to Kent State and, you know, we have three pillars of our program. And one of them is blue collar. And it's one that I've always just loved. Like, get dirty. You don't got to be flashy. You don't have to, you know, kind of, I don't know. Like, we're going to get in, or we're going to get the work done. We're going to get the job done, like, no matter what, whatever it takes. And for me, like, even doing that felt very kind of blue collar, old school, traditional. I love kind of connecting with those aspects of the game. And so I tried it. I was like, why not? Let's see. And it just stuck. I don't know. Like, it just stuck. People noticed, started noticing it. I'm like, this feels strange. And it's apparently a kind of a controversial subject. But I, if people think it looks good or not, I'm like, I don't really care. My shirt's not in my way. So, and it's not going to get in the way of the job that I know I need to do. So
I want to ask, because I also, we've seen you recently at the Emmys. Couldn't tuck in that. That's a beautiful dress, right? No shirt tucked in there.
But no shirt tucked in there, no.
No. Some players don't like that. Some players are like, I'd just rather play. I'd rather go home in sweats or whatever. Are you a fan of the glam up moments? It's sort of a, you know, it's a nice part of being an athlete. Yeah. You get to go to these big events.
Yeah, it is. I'm always down for a moment where we can, like, switch it up. You know, again, I would say 95% of my life is lived in sweatpants. And, like, it's nice to just, like, be a girl for once and, like, get dressed up. We have these makeup artists and these incredible events we get to go to. So I love getting able to go. I would not say I'm, like, the traditional glitz and glam that maybe some of my teammates are. I definitely need help in some of these ways. I'm not, like, a big designer girl. I'm more of, like, a canvas tote or, you know, my New Yorker tote. That's my go-to.
There you go.
The free one you get. Timberlands.
Yeah.
Like Sam.
A Yankee cap. She's like, what's good? Where's the food?
You call this pizza? But it's always fun to kind of switch it up a little
bit. When tucking the shirt, how often does it get untucked during a game?
Honestly, not often. I got it pretty snug in there. Like, I got my shorts tied and, like,
because you know how they say, like, certain, like, center backs, like Virgil van Dijk, they'll be like, oh, uh-huh, like, he looks like he's not really doing anything because he's always in the right position. I would imagine the barometer of how good of a game you had, it's like, if the tuck didn't move at all, you're like, I didn't even have to, diving tackles.
Expected tucks is 0.0. You had a great game. Sam Coffey is crushing
XT.
That.
I love that. The XT is low. I mean, look, like, I'm not known for my speed. And so, like, I would say no one's also in a position where they absolutely, like, need to pull my shirt out of the tuck to catch me on a quick counter. Like, I like to believe I have other strengths, but I would not say that my speed is one of them. So I don't think, there's many opportunities where I'm worried too much about the tuck getting undone. And if it does, I just go back real quick because it's got to be in order.
I want to ask, because obviously you guys are about to play two big games against Portugal. And you scored, I believe it was Ireland, China, and one other game that you've scored. But when it was the matches against Ireland, if I'm not mistaken, those were two in a row. Sometimes the women's national team will play two matches back-to-back against the same nation.
Yeah.
You like that? You hate that? Is it fun?
I don't know if I like or dislike. It's always hard. It's always hard. And I will say, I think what I do like about it is that it does prepare us for major tournaments, where a lot of the time that does happen. Like, we in 2024 played Germany in the group stage and then had to play them again in the semifinal, like probably a week later, because those games were like boom, boom, boom. So, yeah, it's always hard because teams are always going to come out differently. Usually there's personnel change, different formation, whatever it might be. And so it's, like, such a test to be able to, you know, okay, we beat you well this first time, but, like, the second game is going to pose a totally different challenge. And it's a different city, different climate, different fields. Again, usually they switch up some stuff. We try to switch up some stuff. So it's always challenging. It's always a good time, especially when it's, you know, top opponents that we get to play. And it's great prep for major tournaments.
I would imagine, like, the only negative is bad blood spilling over to
they remember.
They're like, oh, we just played you.
We remember you.
You're whispering in someone's ear, I remember you. You untucked my shirt.
I want to ask just a couple more questions before we let you go. Winning the Olympic gold. I mean, obviously you were talking about the homecoming at Sleepy Hollow, but just such a good moment, I think, for the U.S. Women's National Team and fans of the national team, especially of how difficult that 2023 World Cup was, because I mean, we bumped into Alyssa Nair at a party a while ago, and I was like, the ball didn't cross the line, you know. I she was just like, it didn't, right? And so we still haven't sort of let go of that. But
yeah.
I mean, it was just a great moment, just seeing the joy on all the players' faces. Obviously, like, you know, Trinity Rodman was already a star, but really got a lot more attention after that Olympic win. But what is your favorite memory from winning the Olympics?
Oh my gosh. I mean, like, I feel like the easy answer is gold. So I feel like I got to give you something else.
No, I'm sure there was a tackle you put in or something. Right. That was.
I mean, look, I got myself into some trouble, obviously.
A couple yellows.
Just a couple. I mean, look, that rule is so stupid. Like, come on. But you get, like,
I completely
agree.
That's my soccer hot take. Yellow card accumulation is dumb.
Thank you. Look, it was totally on me. Like, I own it. But I mean, yeah, easy answer, gold. Like, just the, like, quintessential euphoric moment you dream of as a kid. Like, you know, your life flashes before your eyes of all, like, the time you're out on the field alone and the extra sessions and the car rides and, like, all of it that leads to just, like, this moment of pure joy where your dreams are coming true and you're just like, oh my gosh, is this real life? So I have just so much gratitude for that experience and for that moment. I mean, I would say best experience. I mean, I personally, like, I think other than the final, of course, I think our win in group stage against Germany, I think it was 4-1. Mm-hmm. I'm blanking now on the score. It's like all a blur. But that was just like, we were on some different level. I'm not going to curse, but it was like really, like, it was just, we were so on it. And, like, you know, our cohesion, our connection, like, it was so good. And it like felt like we were playing FIFA. Like, honestly, I was like, and I remember leaving that game and actually going up to Hyatt and I'm like, we're doing it. Like, this is happening. He's like, we have some ways to go. And I'm like, you're so right. But, like, we're doing it. Yeah.
We're winning.
Yeah. But this is us.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're just like a force to be reckoned with. And I think that momentum totally carried us forward in the rest of the tournament. So it was just an incredible experience, though.
Who's the first person you text a photo of the gold medal to?
I think it was my parents were there. I think it was some friends I've met here in Portland, and I actually was drug tested. So it's like this awful selfie. I'm like in the I'm about to get drug tested. I think Marta's in there as well. You know, she's obviously like emotional, and a couple other Brazilian girls, and we're just in this room, and you know, like, you go from the podium to then being followed back by one of the drug testing people who are like watching your every move.
Right. Because, congratulations. Like, I have to watch you pee now.
literally. And they're like, and then I'm pretty sure my pee might have been too dilute because, like, I'd been drinking too much water. I don't know. And then I had to do it again. So anyway, my first picture is like literally the selfie, and you see the medal, and I'm like trying not to be noticeable because there's people everywhere. Again, like watching everything. So I'm like, am I going to get in trouble for taking a picture at gold medal? So I think that was the first picture I'd sent. And I'm like, yep,
that's hilarious.
It's not glamorous. I'm not pounding beers. I actually have a
very weird story about players being having to do the drug test after matches. We just got back from Dortmund. And in Dortmund, there's a legendary story of there was a Champions League game, I believe, against Juve. And they were doing
German.
They have a room. So they're giving us a tour and they show the room. There's like, that's where they do the drug test and they bring the players in. And
because the players have sweat so much, in order to help you, they give you beer.
Oh, that's nice.
Right after the match, they'll hand you a beer and that'll help you pee.
It doesn't have to be water, right?
But the one that was interesting, it was a game against Dortmund against, I believe, Juve. And a player from Dortmund, I forgot which one, but the another player was Buffon. Gianluigi Buffon is in there and he's doing and peeing in the cup and doing the whole thing. For some reason, the Juve team bus forgot he was in there doing that and they left without him.
Well, because the other player needed more beer because he couldn't pee. So they wouldn't let either of them out.
Oh my gosh. No.
And then he ended up, like, the team left. Like, they had a flight and he had to end up having to fly.
Dorman got him a private jet.
Dorman got him a private jet to go.
All right.
Well, and I think the other player was like Shinji Kagawa.
Maybe I forgot. Yeah.
And he was so drunk because he doesn't like beer. I will ask one quick question. You mentioned Marta. Does she remember that you interviewed her when you were like 11 years old?
No, definitely not.
You didn't bring it up?
No, I mean, not
at that time, right?
She's got other things to think about and worry about. She doesn't have to think about me. I mean, I think about it obviously because she, and I mean, I think everyone in our league just has like nothing but absolute respect and just awe of Marta and just her, not just her longevity, but yeah, just like truly one of the greatest female players to ever touch a ball and has just left the game totally so much better than she found it. And we hope she continues to play, obviously. But I have vivid memories of that experience. My mom actually speaks Portuguese. So she was like translating for us. And I'm just like standing there, like looking up at Marta and I'm like looking at my mom. And I'm just like in awe that this is actually happening. And then all of a sudden you're sharing a field with her and you're chasing her around trying to win a gold medal. And I'm like, wow, life is pretty crazy.
Life's awesome.
Here we are.
But I mean, yeah. Marking Marta, even now, it has to be quite frustrating. She's still very good.
I don't even think that like marking is the word I would use. Probably like getting beat by. Yeah.
Watching? I
mean, just watching her go viewing past you. Like, yeah. No, I mean, she is just incredible and so good on the ball. So creative and savvy. And like, I'm just a huge fan of her game. And yeah, I don't love playing against her, but I...
Of course not.
Secretly fangirl, like while I'm, you know, still on the field.
Okay.
So.
Two quick questions. The last few, definitely last like 2-3 years, TikTok and national team, U.S. Women's National Team TikTok is, I follow everybody.
I love it.
I see Alyssa Thompson, and it was now at Chelsea, but always she has the dances or whatever. Yeah. I know there's always a lot of like encouragement. And I don't know if you've been in any, how much conversation preparation is happening for these TikToks, because it seems like it become a big part of the culture of the locker room.
A huge part of the culture, you know, like definitely one of our founding pillars as a team and like what really has gotten us through
blue
so many
collar,
difficult moments.
How Michelle Akers assumed it would have been.
Yeah. They passed down the tradition of TikToks to the next generation. No, I mean, look, I'm definitely not the girl to ask. I'm a little bit... you know, like the tuck. I'm a little bit old school in that way. I don't even have it. So I don't really know what all goes on. I love watching them and sure. I will be happy to participate if I'm called upon. and I think the ones even like we do on media day and kind of like the voiceover ones are always so funny. But those girls, like, I don't think they're like practicing for days. Like they just rip it out and they get it flawlessly. And I think it's just something to behold. And look, they are growing the platform. They are attracting different fans. So it's just like, I love it. And they're always so funny when they do it.
Last question for me. This is something I want to start. I haven't done this with other guests that we've had in the past, but I want to start because I saw somebody talk about this. What's the greatest goal you've ever seen live?
Ooh.
And you can take some time to think about it or anything. But I'm curious. I want to hear what players, maybe they've been on the pitch, maybe they were watching them, but I'm curious what that vantage point, that point of view from players.
Greatest goals I've ever seen live. And you're like, I'm thinking about like when I was a kid. I mean.
I would say when I scored. Different personalities.
Look, I mean, yeah. There's not that many of those, honestly. I mean, I will say watching Trin's goal in the quarterfinal when I was not playing and I was in the stands watching I was hostage. Like I couldn't even be with the team. Like I'm up there in jail. Like there's a security guard making sure I don't like go crazy.
Right. Ridiculous.
But you know, and I'm sitting there just like with my heart and my stomach be 120 minutes. And I mean, never doubted we were going to win. Like even the whole game, I'm just like, this is going to happen. I know it's going to happen, you know, and she just cuts her defender and like left footed curler postage stamp. I think I got to say that one. And just like the emotional relief too, of like, oh my God, like it's, I went up to her after and I was like, God bless.
Thank you for giving me one more game to play.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I really wanted to get back in there.
But just, I mean, and just such an incredible goal. Like, incredible. No, so.
A huge moment. I love it. All
that's
right.
Massive. Yeah, all that's right. Really cool.
You got anything else?
No,
so
that's
good?
It.
All right.
Sam, thank you so much for taking your time.
Sam Coffey. Everybody, obviously, the matches for the national team are coming up October 23rd and October 26th and October 28th. So two against Portugal, one against New Zealand. It's going to be obviously very exciting to see you back there and playing and obviously NWSL playoffs are obviously coming soon and we're still all fighting for positions. It's very tight outside. For some reason Kansas City has all the points. I don't know why.
Whatever.
For now. But anything can happen in the playoffs. So best of luck in the NWSL playoffs and best of luck for the rest of the season. Sam Coffey, it's been an absolute honor. You're
absolute
welcome
honor.
On this show anytime. And
if
you're ever in New York, don't hesitate to stop by.
Oh, I will be. Don't keep doubt it. Yeah. Thank
you.
We're
guys.
We're
going so to Wakey Hollow,
me.
Baby.
The W. Yeah,
everybody knows it. WH.
WH.
Thank you so much, Sam.
Thank you, guys.
Shout out to Sam Coffey. Thank you so much for joining us. Absolute honor.
Bro, we got nothing but stars here.
Olympians, gold medalists.
You know.
And Sam Coffey.
Captains. Right. I'm an Olympian. You guys watch Shot Put?
We out there. So shout out to Sam Coffey. All right. We got to move on to MLS. Hey, Caleb Porter has been fired by the New England Revolution.
Yeah.
So let's take a look around the league and see if Jim Curtin is the right hire for the club. So it might be news to some people if you're not locked into Major League Soccer.
If you're not an MLS sicko.
But Caleb Porter, a person who, I mean, we can be pretty frank here. And not to say that we have too many sort of inside sources.
We got some.
We got a couple. I really have never heard anybody say something positive about Caleb Porter.
Man. Everything we heard was, this guy sucks. sometimes it's just there's not a good union. Jim Curtin.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Between the coach and the team, or maybe it starts on a bad foot. I also think in the past, Caleb Porter won everywhere else he went pretty much, right? Besides New England.
He won at Columbus and at Portland. So he has a history of success,
but I have a feeling that success is what made everyone be like, all right, there's a method to that madness.
Yeah.
And in New England, it was just madness.
Boy, it's something like where that personality, that tone might work for one era, you know, in the early 2010s.
You're saying they too Gen Z in New England.
It's a little bit like, you know, how Bobby Knight was successful, but it just after a while, it's like, all right, grandpa's throwing a little too many chairs.
Right. Because you see a chair get thrown in the 80s and you say to yourself, hey, I'm inspired.
Exactly.
And now you say, I need to speak to your manager.
Because we're catching it in 4K. Yeah. When it was grainy.
You can't do that.
You can't do that. So Caleb Porter.
Or if you're my nephew, you just stare at me. And you're like, say something.
The Gen Z stare.
I'm not Netflix, baby.
There was an article.
Was there?
On the Prost International.com.
Yeah, which we all follow. When I wake up in the morning and I go right to Prost International.
By Caleb Pongratz. I believe he covers the New England Revolution for the Prost International.
Oh, did Caleb Porter? I don't know why they fired this guy.
But the headline of the article said, nobody loves him and he forgets that we have family and are people.
That's the title.
That is the headline of this article, and not a ringing endorsement for your coach. So if you look up this article, you can see a lot of quotes from former players. They're all anonymous.
Yeah,
the one we know that
it feels also unanimous at the same time.
The one we know. So Maxi Urruti, friend of the show, we made mate with him in Frisco when he was at FC Dallas.
Right, we called him Mate Urruti.
Right, so the homie. And so Maxi Urruti, who was released by the New England Revolution.
Unceremoniously, apparently.
After they lost, he tweeted out a message on Instagram. He posted, I believe, an IG story. And this is a rough translation in English, but basically said, at the end, the problem was not the real problem.
Damn.
So clearly saying, yo,
You try to blame this on me.
It's on me. And y'all get smacked by LAFC.
Yeah.
And so when you are a former player and you're like basically gloating when your former team loses, I'm going to say Maxi probably has a couple points here that.
Sure. But you're not making it sound like you weren't any of the problem either.
No.
You know what I mean?
No, I understand. I mean, you have to realistically be like, and Maxi Urruti is a player towards the end of his career, but we met him and nothing came across as this dude is like mean-spirited or anything. He was a very like lighthearted, fun guy. Yeah. So, but, you know, I think, have we been around Caleb Porter before? I don't know if we have.
I think very briefly we were, and it wasn't.
Wasn't he on Morning Footy?
I believe we did interview him, yes.
And it was not
a great
He's not a fun guy to just chat with.
Yeah, he wasn't the warmest human being.
Exactly. And when
not
you,
the most intense, very intense, but not the most intense.
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, when I see some of these comments from players, I'm like,
my favorite in the article is how it talks about how like he would tell players, "Hey, don't listen to the outside noise. Don't listen to the media. Don't even look at it.
Yeah.
We got to keep it inside." And then he pulled players' eyes like, "Yo, you see what they saying about me in the media?
It's such a fact.
This is ridiculous.
This is the most gaslighting thing I've ever really heard of."
He would ask players to sort of speak out.
Well, yeah, he said, so he didn't have a Twitter. He didn't have social media, but was on, he clearly had burners. Yeah. Clearly watching what everybody's saying. So he would bring up articles and commentary from other people and tell the player, like, "Yo, can you say publicly, like, this didn't happen.
Take the heat off me real quick."
Right. And apparently the only...
It's like high school when you'd be like, "Yo, tell your girl," right? Because I know she's mad at me right now, but she's your friend. "Yo, tell your girl that I was with you that whole time." You know what I mean?
Basically. But apparently the only player that ever did this... was Marc-Anthony Kay.
Hilarious.
And he's no longer at the Reds. He's at Toronto now.
Every ass kiss begins with K.
I'm sure.
I'm only joking. He just worked too well to not do it.
But interesting enough, in the article itself, it also corroborates. So Marc-Anthony Kay said, like, "Hey, don't mention my name on things that aren't true." And the reporter, Caleb, here said, right? Is his name Caleb? Did I get that correct? Caleb, yeah. He said that was true. That was correct. Like, it was about a fight in the locker room between players. And Marc-Anthony Kay said, like, that actually didn't happen. And then he investigated it and asked about it. And that it actually did not happen. So Marc-Anthony Kay doing this was because it was true, not because necessarily Caleb Porter.
He
coerced
him
or told him to do it. He was like literally disavowing a story that was not true.
Yeah.
So, but this is just hilarious. The main thing for us, I mean, based on the stuff we've heard, not surprising at all.
It's a little surprising how bad it was, but no one ever said this was like, "Nah, it'll turn around." No one. And, you know, we know people associated with the club or with the club, and they were all like, "It's way worse than than they're even saying." So we never knew like what that meant, but now it's like none of this really shocks me.
It's interesting that this, we have all this detail here about this, and we still don't know what happened with Bruce Arena, right? It's just a very strange...
Well, Prost needs to get on top of this.
Prost International, sort this out.
Where's Roos Abrina to do the story? The other thing we've heard now is that Jim Curtin seems to be the name that's floated around.
Yeah.
Apparently, they've made contact with Jim Curtin.
And I'm texting Jim Curtin, "Stay away.
Yo.
Don't go anywhere near..."
she's toxic.
The Kraft family is going to ruin you, bro.
Yeah. I just think this is a bad situation, but also just from a footballing perspective, forget like the coach or the owner. It just feels like this team needs to go through another rebuild.
Yeah.
And Jim, do you really want to be in charge of that? You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's unless they're...
He listens, so we're literally talking to him.
There has to be a very good offer financially. He's currently still getting paid from the Philadelphia Union. He has no reason to rush to take some job. At the end of the MLS season, there'll be a bunch of coaching opportunities available on with teams that are probably in a little bit more stable positions. So...
Maybe come across as more exciting projects.
Yeah, I mean, with all due respect to all our Revs listeners and fans and friends, it's just right now, it's like, we know Jim, and Bro, I just want what's best for him.
Yeah, man. I mean, I know you guys are our fans, but so is he. So we get to talk to him directly.
We have to consider that. Yeah, it's a bad.
It seems like a bad situation. Now, the positive is though, if you turn that around, you're a god.
Sure.
And Bruce Arena, you mentioned him, was at that point where they're like, oh man, it seems like things are turning around, and that sort of failed pretty horrifically, miserably. We just still don't know what happened.
Sure.
But it collapsed at one point. So, do you want to walk into this mess? I also still don't really know how much this team is sort of like a focal point for the ownership. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I know they've invested, so you can't say they haven't, but it still doesn't feel like the right.
The one thing that could be a like sort of exciting part of it is that I know the Revolution are trying to get their own stadium in Boston proper.
Yeah, that's true.
And then if there's like news there about that, you would think that there would be a lot more investment. And it's just like the identity of the club since Bruce Arena left is like sort of gone. I don't even Caleb
it's
Porter.
It's bad when you'd rather be the coach of Boss Nation. You know what I mean?
sure.
I think the legacy now or whatever.
Legacy, yeah. The other, we don't have this on the rundown, but I don't know if you, DC United also fired their GM.
Yeah.
I've been sort of keeping up as much as possible, but they hired some sort of interim sporting director that is in Germany and working remotely. Which is just
Zoom meetings, bro.
Which is just
a work from Deutschland is new. This is new.
Which is so surreal. And again, another club that are really in kind of like just disarray. And
ever since they built the stadium, it's been
I think I believe Charles Boehm had posted on Blue Sky. Audi Field has hosted one playoff game in 7 years since it was built. The Washington Spirit are doing great. They have exciting time, but DC United are not. And they host a couple, congressional games that I've emceed.
You have? Yeah, you have.
So that's been fun as well. But DC United are another one where I've been just seeing a lot of stuff from the fans themselves and saying like that they're no longer they're not going to renew their season tickets. Like fans that have been season ticket holders since 1996 when MLS started.
That's crazy.
And they said they're not going to renew until the team is sold. They're not going to buy merch. They're not going to buy single game tickets. Like people are just truly, absolutely done.
They ain't got that many of them to say no to. You know what I mean? So, like, you need to.
Yeah, really unfortunate.
Save the pupusas, bro.
We're getting closer to the playoffs, but this is around the time, you'll see a couple coaches get fired. People start thinking about the future.
How good of a player Benteke is, and you're just wasting
it. It's just a waste, man. So disappointing. So disappointing.
Damn.
All right. Let's wrap
it up. The last good thing that happened was Wayne Rooney. The Lucho Costa,
moments.
Yeah.
Did Rooney ever make it to the playoffs with DC?
I think that Lucho Costa header got him in the playoffs, if I'm not mistaken.
Maybe. It was a game that they needed to win.
Yeah.
But I don't remember what year they got there. Anyway, thank you, everybody, for listening to another episode of The Cooligans. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Sam Coffee.
Shout out to Sam Coffee, the legend. Just call it captain now.
Yeah.
That's what we have to do. So, everybody, just make sure you subscribe to the show. If you have not, hit subscribe. Hit the like button. Do all the things you're supposed to do.
Make sure you follow us
on our socials at Soccer Cooligans on Instagram, TikTok, Blue Sky, especially. All the action is happening over there. More and more people are joining. Mm-hmm. You can scroll.
How much stock do you own in this company?
But you can scroll through and not see any Elon tweets, bro. It's amazing.
What a beautiful. Unless people screen cap them.
Occasionally, but it's like they're roasting. It's a much more peaceful scroll.
Yeah.
So that's why I always recommend
it. Sounds like doom scrolling.
Exactly. So make sure you follow us there. And we're going to be in Kansas City again this weekend for the Premier League Fan Fest, Premier League Mornings with NBC, the whole
we
gang.
We in BBQ, baby!
Rebecca Lowe, Tim Howard, the two
Robbies.
Yes.
Us. We're also Robbies now.
It's all right. It's six Robbies.
Robbie Howard, Robbie Lowe, Robbie Musto, Robbie Earl,
Robbie
Belonga, Robbie Guerrero. Yeah,
so you love them all. So.
Robbie Shearer. We're all going
to
be there.
Robbie Wright, of course. Yeah. You'll see us there. We'll be on stage saying hello to everybody. Feel free to, again, like I said last episode, say hello. We're happy to take some selfies, do whatever you gotta do. Happy to, kiss your baby.
Yeah.
Okay, whatever you gotta do. All right, so
even if you don't ask, Christian's going to be like, I'm going to kiss you, babe.
I mean, literally a ridiculous thing to say. I would never do such a... But the fun thing about the Premier League Fan Fest is that people love Rebecca Lowe so much that they give her their baby.
People do hand from the crowd. Yeah, from like, the not crowd, even near they're
like,
her.
They're like, yo, catch.
And, yo, but what happens to every baby that's in her arms? Stay calm.
Oh, but without a doubt.
You put a baby in my hands, even that baby knows this wasn't the right move, parents.
America.
This guy's nervous. I'm nervous. What's going on?
She's America's soccer mom. Yeah. Everybody knows.
Why is he holding me by the leg? You know, I don't know how to hold a baby.
All right. We'll see you in Kansas City. Enjoy your weekend. Enjoy your games. We got a Merseyside derby for that fan fest. So right. I hope all
Liverpool over under 6 goals.
You know, I know who Cash Patel's rooting for. So we'll see you.
Actually, he just said Everton don't exist, which is weird. We have so much evidence. It's weird.
All right. Take care, everybody. Peace.